Aloha, and you are listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea, the station that loves you, and Kauai Soapbox Live with myself and Eric, and I have Jan Tan Brutengate in here with us right now, too. And I'm just so happy and honored to be a part of this team. I appreciate how much I get to learn in here, and I appreciate how much the community provides for all of us to be learning through their calls. And just can't say enough mahalos for the people, the listeners who actually are donators.
It certainly is a blessing. You know, I've been on the air less than a year now, and every single time, you know, we try and bring as much knowledge to the people and whoever's out there listening in the world, and it's great for you guys and it's great for us. So yeah.
Yeah, and Jan, I want to make sure you're mic'd up right. Can you...
I'm mic'd up. Thanks for having me.
There he is. Okay, well, great. So today we're going to have a little bit stronger focus on energy. There'll be other issues that come in, and there'll be a few different calls. But you are running for KIUC Board of Director, and you're an incumbent. How long have you been in there?
I was first elected in 2010, and so I served 1 3-year term.
Okay, so 1 3-year term, and there are 9 board members, and every year we re-elect 3.
Yeah.
Or we elect 3. That creates for a nice rotation.
And just to follow up on that point, this last year we re-elected nobody. We got 3 new board members in Pat Gagan and Karen Baldwin and Cal Morishige.
Right on. And how's that felt? Has it been a good and productive year?
They're good folks, really committed. I know you've talked to at least one of them. I don't know if several of them, but they're one of the things you find getting into KIUC is that the utility business has a really steep learning curve. You know, I was an energy and environment writer for the Honolulu Advertiser for many years. I thought I knew a lot. I got in there and realized that I didn't know much.
I want to explore that in a few minutes. We do have a caller that I'm going to take. This is a call-in show at 826-7771 or toll-free 866-275-1112. And I have spoken to all of the directors now, and so we will be getting everyone in here, hopefully. They're all being given that opportunity.
You mean the candidates?
The candidates.
Right.
Aloha, you are on the air.
Oh, hi, Felicia. This is Scott. How you doing?
Good, Scott.
Hey, I haven't had a chance to see what your show is, you know, what the subject matter is, and I apologize if I'm throwing everything off and ruining the flow, but I just wanted to make a quick announcement and let all the surfers know out there that in 1/2 hour we're having a paddle out for our dear friend and surfer, Rick Proska, out of Blackpot. And that's all I wanted to say.
Okay.
That's in 1 hour?
In 4:30.
And are people meeting at the pier or at Pine Trees? Where are they going to be at?
At Blackpot.
At Blackpot Park, which is right next to the pier. Okay. My love goes out to Charlene and the family, and we honor Rick.
I appreciate you calling in with that, too. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Have a good show.
Aloha. Thank you. Okay. Let's talk about that. This is really important because... what have you learned in your time on the board that you feel is necessary to know about running a power company?
Yeah, I don't think you ever stop learning. I had a sense, I think, in the early years about what it costs to produce energy and how you generate energy and various things of that sort. What I've learned since then is the real incredible complexity of rate design, making sure that rates are fairly distributed among the different classes of membership, you know, commercial and making sure that folks who use a lot of power aren't being subsidized by folks who are very very meager power demands, who do a good job of conserving energy, I like to talk about what I refer to as almost jokingly as the little old lady in Kalaheo. I think she actually exists. Her electric bill is about $80 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And some folks say, well, she must have solar. She must have, you know, how is it possible that you could have an electric bill that small? And it's that small because she really conserves. She turns things off. She doesn't have energy guzzling habits. Phantom loads are controlled. That sort of thing. All of those little pieces are a part of the bigger energy puzzle. There's the regulatory side. There's strategic planning for how we get off of fossil fuels, how we get off of oil without impoverishing our membership. Because when I got in, the standard answer was you can do renewables, but they're more expensive.
And that's changing.
And that has changed. Every renewable that we're putting on the KIUC grid is coming in at less than the cost of oil-fired power. Mm-hmm. That's been a sea change for us. And I think a credit to the folks who have been managing our utility. And I don't mean us. I mean, I'm at the board level. But the folks who are hands-on running our utility, our employees, our director, I mean, our leading staff, our engineers, just are doing remarkable work. They're doing things that nobody else in the country is doing.
Can you give us an example?
One of my favorites is solar. Mm-hmm. We're putting solar on the grid at 75% of the cost of oil. We're looking down the road at KIUC produced solar that'll be at half the cost of oil, and that'll translate into lower rates for our members.
And right now, when you're saying it's 75%, are most of these solar farms that we're seeing on land, those are what we would call an outside provider, and they're on something like a Schedule Q where they're...
We have a number of different ways that people that solar gets onto our grid. The standard one, the most common one, is folks have a few panels on their roof.
Mm-hmm.
Individuals do. And in many cases, they use all of the solar they produce, so they never sell anything. It's not an issue for them. We have other folks like the Kapaa solar mm-hmm. array. It's a 1 megawatt solar array, and the Alexander and Baldwin Port Allen 6 megawatt array, in which an investor, in the one case it's Alexander and Baldwin, and it's in another it's a small corporation, invested the money and wrote a power purchase agreement with KIUC.
That's the word I was looking for, power purchase agreement.
I know, I'm sorry. I was just going to say, I know on that one solar panel right past the Kapaa Middle School, I'm not going to mention any names, but... he was really fed up with the fact that we weren't instituting large-scale solar panels with KIUC, so he just built all of his own, and he's selling electricity back to KIUC. And that's just a case example of somebody doing it by themselves.
They were one of the first, right? That particular solar field was one of the first?
Yeah, I don't think he'll mind if I mention his name. Kurt Bosshart built the system. He negotiated with KIUC ahead of time. He didn't go, just to clarify, he didn't just go ahead and build it and then come and talk
mm-hmm,
to us,
yeah.
which is really important. Mm-hmm. He talked to us. He negotiated with us. He had some time constraints. As a board, we rushed his approval to allow him to get the tax credits that he needed. And because we wanted to get that system on the grid, we were at that point, it's only a couple of years ago, but we had hardly any. The grid. We're now looking at a remarkable change in our solar. We're looking at producing within 3 or 4 years most of our daytime power from solar.
That's really impressive. And what I've been really happy to be seeing is all these municipal buildings and plenty of others where there a lot of the roof line is filled with solar panels. I would think that that's the best use of placement for the solar panels is as much as we could put on roofs, then there's less worry about having to keep the grass weeded underneath. And mm-hmm. I don't know how much of an issue that is, but...
if you've been down to the Kauai Beach Resort at Nuku'ali'i, They now have their parking lot covered.
I haven't seen that there. I have seen it at the Hyatt.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
And then when we look at that, when we have what I would call source point power production, that's got to be saving power in line loss, too, as it's it's going around. Because I know there's an amount of line loss.
Yeah, the last number I saw was about 7%. So we generate 7% more power than we can account for actually being delivered
consumed
to customers. And the general term for that is line loss. It includes a number of factors, including folks who have illegally hooked up and are using power without paying for it. So, but most of it is, in fact, line loss, just the cost of the energy that you lose running at long distances.
We had a caller. I'm sorry. We had a caller a few minutes ago, and the topic she wanted to bring up was in the last KIUC magazine that came out, said that the KIUC was going to try to be using natural gas as an energy source. And her only concern was if we're going to be getting this natural gas from the mainland, which is going to be using fracking to get it, she was just saying, shouldn't we not be doing that so we're not fracking the United States, the mainland, to be getting our power? That's what the caller had called in about.
Yeah, and I'm also concerned about that. We have not made any firm plans to do natural gas here. We're clearly looking at that issue.
Mm-hmm.
Because if there is a source of natural gas that's an acceptable source, that's sourced in the right way, and if we can deliver power to our members at a substantially better rate, that would be a good thing. One of the things that people look at when they look at natural gas is they look at the prices people are paying on the mainland. And they haven't included the cost of taking the natural gas that's now piped as a gas into people's homes and they run their furnaces and things off of it. To get it here, you have to compress it to a liquid form. You have to transport it in special ships.
Yeah.
Things like the Jones Act, if you're familiar, mm-hmm. that come into play. We need a terminal in which to accept it, to accept that power and bring it in, and we have to retrofit our system to do it. There's a lot of cost involved in there.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps the best, my understanding is that the best comparison is Japan, because they're an island nation. Their natural gas is brought in, and it is not, as people who haven't looked at the complexities say, natural gas is 20% of the cost of oil. In Japan, it's something like 70% of the cost of oil. And at 70%, it doesn't take much of a spike to be at the price of oil.
Yeah.
And it's still a fossil fuel. It's a cleaner fossil fuel, but it's still a fossil fuel.
It's more explosive, though, yes? It's more volatile? Or do I have that wrong?
That's my understanding, but I don't have special expertise in that. It's cleaner. It's still a fossil fuel. It still subjects us to price spikes out of our control and to having to bring our energy in from far away as opposed to producing it locally. And our focus, our single-minded focus at KIUC has been trying to develop the technology in such a way that we produce our energy at home. We keep those something like $100 million that KIUC, as an example, pays every year for oil and uses that money locally.
Mm-hmm.
What an impact that would have on our economy.
And also when we have the point source power production, I would think if we does the hospital have solar panels on it, do you know?
I know they did. I don't know the status of the hospital.
Okay, and I when I think of big flat roofs like Kukui Grove or a lot of these stores, I would think the more that we could do that, I would wonder if there isn't some way for, even if they don't choose to put it on, that space could be leased almost to next to nothing to the power company, because then you're right above the consumption of those products.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody's doing that currently, but that is a model that's been used elsewhere.
Yeah.
And might be appropriate.
Because yeah. And again, I'm asking, when we have all these locations all around the island, I would think that that builds in resilience. Instead of having a complete power outage, the buildings that have it, they're going to be able to stay operating and functioning.
When the sun is shining.
Yeah.
At least when the sun is shining. But that's a very significant amount of time. It's not like we have to have heaters or air conditioners or something like that that's essential to sustain life,
mm-hmm.
Or to keep people from freezing to death, like what we're seeing on the East Coast when they've had the big power outages from the hurricane there. So
yeah, one of the issues, there are a number of issues with solar. I mean, we're going gangbusters into solar, but we also recognize that there are some significant technological challenges and a range of other challenges. You know, one of them is that unless you have a storage system in place, you have to be connected to the grid. So if the grid were to go down, your solar panels won't automatically light your house in the absence of a grid.
Yeah, you need a generator.
But you can set that up.
I don't. Is that accurate? I mean, because like I have a hybrid system, but if the power system is down, it works just fine.
Yeah,
I don't need to
if you set it up. But most folks, I'll use the example of my own. I've got 8 panels on my roof.
Yeah, I have 6.
Put in by a fellow named Charlie.
Okay, I remember him.
You know him. And the way my system is set up, I've basically sized it to take out my daytime load. So it's not my goal to sell power; it's simply to take out my daytime load. But if that system, the system that I put in, which was one of the least expensive ones you can put in, needs to sense the grid in order to function, and those panels stop producing power if the grid is gone. But I don't have battery backup, and you can.
Oh, okay. I have batteries.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Is your solar panels can't just power your house; they need a battery to plug into, kind of to store that electricity.
They don't actually. I mean, they don't. But it's good to have them. We have a caller, and Charlie, if you're listening, call in. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hey, Andrea.
This is
Jan. This is Stu Burley calling.
Oh, hi.
Hey, Stu.
Hey, you were talking about Wilcox and a little bit of history here. Years and years ago, they had a solar system, antiquated as we look at it today, but they did have the system. And maintenance costs became so high that Wilcox did get rid of their system, and PMRF picked it up. Huh. And then PMRF tried to get it into their grid. They worked on it, and due to the salt air and everything, it just continuously deteriorated. And finally, PMRF got rid of all of the system. But yes, the question, did Wilcox ever have it? Yes, but it was years and years ago, 20 years ago, 25 years ago. When they did have it. I just thought I'd clarify that.
Okay, I appreciate that. And I'd like to be telling the listener that, Stu, you also are running for KIUC Board of Directors and that you have been a past member of the board.
That is correct, yes. I was a member over a year ago. I spent 3 years. I became a certified co-op director, so I do have that certificate. And then last year I did not campaign like I should have. I was on Oahu trying to take care of my wife.
Mm-hmm. So I'm sorry about her passing.
And that took me away from total campaigning. But this year is a little different. So I'm going to be out there. But I was listening, and I just thought I'd bring you up to date on the solar activity at Wilcox.
Thank you. And when they had this corrosion problem from the salt air, I'm wondering how well those nodes were really taken care of, because usually you should be able to put enough rubber and plastic and, you know, seal the areas.
This is Jan. That system, Stu's absolutely right. That system was kind of a hybrid system. It had it had mirrors that aimed the sunlight onto small panels, which generated a lot of heat and had cooling water running behind them.
Yep.
And the hospital, when it was using, the heated water in its boilers and using the electricity at the same time. But it was a very complicated system that ran into, as Stu's absolutely right, had ran into some problems.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome that they were putting on their solar panels so many years ago, but
yeah.
I know for a fact that the solar technology has come a long way since then, so it'd be probably a big difference to the solar panels of today than they were.
Well,
absolutely, yes. the solar activity today. You see it. You see it out in the fields. You can see it on the homes. They now have solar panels that you just, it comes in a roll, and you just roll it off on the top of your roof, and it produces electricity for you. It's the manufacturer of panels is changing every day.
Where would we see an example of that rolled type of solar roofing? I haven't noticed it. I've kind of been aware of it, but I haven't consciously seen it. Is there a roof that's evident on Kauai that we might be able to notice the rolled paneling of the solar?
Jan, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the maintenance building at KIUC power plant in Port Allen has the roll type where they just rolled it off on the roof. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I haven't been up there looking at those, but I do know that technology is commonly used on boats. Sailboats,
right.
Sailboats
right.
Traveling around the world will roll the panel out on their on the top of the boat during the day and roll it up, and or if there's a storm, get it into storage so that it's protected from the weather.
Do either one of you know about the hydro systems? You know, we were looking at hydro proposals. Many of us were concerned about the FERC permitted entity, but we had a FERC issue. It didn't happen. But hydro, are we doing micro hydro? Are we doing any kind of hydro elements? Is that in the discussion? I know it was a big disappointment for KIUC to have that FERC process come to a stop, or at least it seemed to be. But, like, where are we with hydro? Is that off the table for another few years, or are we looking at that still?
I think Jan has more information on that, because I've been out of the picture for a year, and I have not seen, except in one Currents magazine, a update on where the hydro activity is.
Yeah,
so
Jen
knows more about that.
The current Currents, I think, has an article on some of our progress in that area. We weren't particularly disappointed about the
FERC.
About the FERC situation. I mean, we were using FERC as we talked about at the time.
Right.
As a placeholder to let us do the studies, which we are continuing to do, and we have no intention of using FERC to license power plants if we don't have to. Our point then was that we made, before we knew as much as we know now, that we wanted to make sure that we had all our ducks in a row, and if we were forced to, that we were ready to go. But yeah, we are continuing to investigate through our consultant a number of hydro sites on the island. We're doing the research. We're talking to farmers. We're talking to Hawaiian homesteaders. We're talking to state and county agencies. I anticipate within about 2 months we'll be having public meetings to outline where we are, because we'll have something to say. Up until now, we haven't had much to say.
I think it's always really important to be bringing it forward to the public as soon as possible. I think that that's the thing that really creates the challenges, is when people don't hear about it until it's, you know, halfway down the road. And then this brings up the point about what is a co-op as opposed to a power company. And I really appreciate KIUC. I especially appreciate the folks that help to run these plants. I've done field trips out there. It's amazing how few people are actually in there risking their lives sometimes up. At least I'm afraid of heights, when you see how high up these guys have to climb regularly, particularly in the wind or the rain when there's challenges. They make a difference for every one of us every day. So a lot of appreciation in that direction. It seems like the power company feels that they make all these decisions before asking the membership. And that's, I think, something that is a pretty big issue that people would like changed.
I know that's an issue, particularly for you, because you and I have talked about that before.
Yes. And I'm in the hot spot of hearing what people are concerned about.
I understand that. I hear too.
Yeah.
As you might imagine. There are a couple of issues. One of them is that I think that KIUC has been slapped around some by our members for good reason, for not having been open enough. And I think that we have changed the paradigm at the utility. I think that the concern and commitment to engaging our community is much higher than it was certainly when I started. There is an issue on the hydro front where I think we may have a commitment, and we could differ on this, but we may have a commitment to the stakeholders in particular locations, the people who are going to be directly impacted or at least indirectly impacted, to talk to them before we go talking to people who have not as much at
stake. It's not in their backyard. If it's your own ahupua'a, you should be spoken to first.
And our people have been talking to the folks whose backyard is involved.
Can you tell us which backyard that is?
Well, one backyard, as an example, is the Hawaiian Homestead community in Kekaha, where we've been sitting down talking with those folks on a regular basis. They have supported us in talking to the Department of Hawaiian Homelands in preparation for potentially doing something out there. And certainly we're sensitive to the fact that we ought to be talking to those guys whose land the water flows through before we start talking to folks in Lihue, as an example.
Right.
And we've been trying to do that, and we've been but we're aware of the issue and I think sensitive to it. There is the issue that in certain situations there's somebody who's going to be displeased by the choice you've made, but we're thinking about those issues and we're trying to do the right thing.
Okay, and Stu, do you have a comment on that?
The Hawaiian Homestead in Kekaha, they're very pro on this. I go down there quite often. I used to be president of the Hawaiian Homestead Association in Kekaha because I lived in Hawaiian homes for many years.
Because your wife is Hawaiian, is that right?
Yes, my wife was Hawaiian, and so I know those people over there, and they are ready. They are ready to help out in any way they can. I have not heard any negative comments from Kekaha. I'm also a member of their senior members club. I guess that's what it's called. And I go down, I meet with them, and just help them out a little bit and talk story with them all the time. But Kekaha is ready. I'm surprised there is not more solar down there because that's all they get down there is sun.
Sun seems like a good space for that.
That's right. But yes, they're backing the hydro any way that they can to decrease their electric bill. That's their main objective in their life over there.
Okay, so you are listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. And Stu, I hope you stay listening, and I've got other callers holding.
Okay.
But feel free to call us back.
I'll call in if I hear something that might need some explanations from years past.
Okay.
We appreciate it, Stu. Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks, Jan.
See ya.
You're up. All right. That's okay. They can call back.
Okay. Well, we got two callers while Stu was on the line. One was asking, they just put solar panels on their roof and they haven't got their bill yet for their first month. But they noticed that they were producing about the same kilowatts that they were using for the month. So they were asking, will they get a bill? I mean, I know from personal experience that if you overproduce, you'll get a small paycheck or a small check from KIUC. But they're asking what's going to happen if they produce the same amount or overproduce.
Yeah, it depends on what they signed up for.
They're probably scheduled to.
There are at least four different ways that people sign up. There's a power purchase agreement, which we talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
There's Schedule Q, where you get a
wholesale
changing rate based on what our current cost of other power is. There is a schedule under which you can lock in a rate that I think is about 20 cents, and it stays at that level. And there are folks who got in early under the net metering, in which a check never comes to them.
No.
But they displace, for example, in the in the extra power they make in the summertime, they can displace the additional power that they use in the wintertime. So there are different ways, and it depends on what these folks signed up for.
Okay, so it's not that simple as just one thing.
Well, and another thing that's not simple is that the Public Utilities Commission, which governs our rates entirely, is now considering changes to the Schedule Q calculation. So those numbers a year from now may not be the same as they are now. So there are a number of things happening.
And if I can add something on that, when there is, because I'm Schedule Q, my former house is a net metering. So in a net metering, it would be like they are expecting that if you make as much as you utilize that, or more, because it has to take the basic cost of delivery out. But now Schedule Q basically pays wholesale for what you produce, but charges you retail for what's consumed. And my understanding of why that strategy is in place is that somehow something has to pay for the line cost of having the infrastructure around to be producing power.
So that pretty much covers that caller's question. The second caller called in, you know, we were talking about hydropower. And I believe they just had kind of questions on what's going on with the Wailua Reservoir, because a number of months ago, maybe even more than a year ago, the Wailua Reservoir was completely drained. And I had no idea what they were doing with it, but he's saying there's a bunch of renovations going on up there. They're extending the height of the dam, and there's just a bunch of construction going on up there. He was wondering if any of us knew of any hydro plans they were doing up there at the reservoir.
No. KIUC, no, the answer is yes.
Okay.
The answer is maybe. The KIUC's consultants are in discussions with a number of stakeholders in that area, including including the farming community, who have an interest in access to water and improved water transportation systems, which might be potentially paid for in part by the revenues from a hydro facility, but those discussions are still in fairly early stages, and no formal form has emerged. So the work that's being done, as I understand it, on that reservoir currently has no KIUC
involved. For farming purposes. Yeah. I mean, that would be a great place to practice hydro. I mean, it's a big reservoir. I used to love going up there and swimming, but that's another topic. Anyways, back to KIUC.
Well, there's a lot of collaborative projects underway. I've been, you know, I don't want to say I have an opinion one way or the other, but I was impressed with the design setup for the landfill and the reclamation and recycling area. It sounds good anyway when it's put out. There's the horizontal drill that they want to put in for the well. That makes me a little bit more nervous, but I do like that there's embedded in there the hydro element to help power that whole facility. I think that we need to be doing more and more of that if we can. Next week we are going to have Eric Knudsen on the show with some other
I thought he was going to be here this week.
Out he's going to be here next week. So he's coming on, and we will be continuing to discuss like what is coming forward with biomass. I think just like any place that you put landfill, any way that you're going to create power, it's going to have some impacts. And so it's always a challenge to find something that isn't going to be bothering some environment somewhere, somehow. And we have to, number one, reduce our own consumption. And so there's a lot of different elements that can be helpful.
Well, and there are a couple of issues there. One of them is that we also have to remember that whatever decisions we don't make in terms of our own locally produced energy means that we continue to pump carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. We continue to have a climate impact, and we need to bear responsibility for that.
And a cultural impact on these other communities that we're taking their oil from them. So a place like Pakistan or Iran or Iraq, they're going through a lot, and we're getting the benefit of the power.
And if you accept the proposition that climate change is associated with sea level change, we're actually destroying countries.
And I would like to shift to that for a moment, and in a little bit, I know there's listeners that are wanting to hear a bit more about smart meters. There's a discussion that we'll have on that. But can you speak to climate change for a moment? Because that's kind of one of your specialties.
Well, I don't know that I'm an expert, but I covered climate change as a reporter, and I continue to pay some attention to it. One of our issues is that our utility for many years has burned about 30 million gallons of fossil fuel, about half of it diesel and half of it naphtha, which when I was a kid on Molokai we used to call white gas.
Did you grow up on Molokai?
Yes, I did.
I didn't know that. Mm-hmm.
And using that amount of fossil fuel is disruptive in a number of ways. It's disruptive certainly economically because of the whatever the current cost of fuel is, $3 or $4 a gallon. It's $100-$120 million that we're shipping off of our island, out of our pockets into somebody else's pockets. But the climate change impact is, I still go to meetings and run into people who don't believe in that the climate is changing, or who think that the climate is changing and don't believe that we have anything to do with it. In my view, and I recognize that people can differ, the evidence is inescapable. I've talked to reputable scientists who have been studying it for a long time, who have come to that conclusion over a period of time, and the impacts are significant. For Hawaii, as an example, we can anticipate, according to some of the research, that a warming climate means higher clouds. Higher clouds means that
less water,
less rain.
Mm-hmm.
And there's already been, over the last 30 years, a significant reduction in the average rainfall in the islands. That has a lot of impacts for agriculture, for fire control, for drinking water.
Everything.
Yeah,
everything.
Absolutely.
Even like tourism, too, that should be on the top of the list. But
yeah, we won't be as green.
We won't be as green. I have a caller that's holding. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to correct something that you mentioned about taking oil, the United States taking oil from Iraq and Iran, and I believe you said Pakistan.
Yes. I wasn't necessarily meaning the United States. I was giving examples of countries that go through hardship because of, they might make money, but it's still a huge environmental impact.
Okay, so I misunderstood. I thought that you said the United States, because we don't take any oil from Iran or Iraq. Definitely not from Iran, definitely not from Iraq. That was the bogus lie about oil for money. But anyway,
those countries do have oil extracted from them, and the Baloch area of Pakistan has quite a bit. And so when you see pictures of that area where they've got the big pipelines and the big machinery, and a number of the Baloch people, they live in almost mud houses, and they live a very, very simplistic lifestyle, very well educated, but they don't have an opportunity for the modern conveniences that are afforded by what is extracted from their land. So I try and bear it in mind that when we are wasteful, we're wasting something that is hurting the potential of another country.
But I would disagree in this way. If you look at Signal Hill, where much oil was taken out, the Getty family, it depends on the type of government that you have there. It's not because they're taking oil out that makes the people poor. The type of government, the oppressive regimes that are around there. But in the United States, oil business has created jobs. It's created, in fact, we don't even need to bring in oil from other countries because there's fracking, which I know you guys don't believe in, but I do. But there's such an abundance of energy here in the United States where we don't even have to bring it in from foreign countries, let alone Canada.
Well,
the repressive regimes are the ones that keep them in mud huts. It's not, if you look at oil here in the United States, people aren't living in mud huts here.
No, they're not. But when we do look at other communities who are impacted by an extractive economy, they're impacted. So I was meaning that the environment...
Well, look at North Dakota. They had the lowest unemployment rate. That's where they're drilling for oil because the federal government can't stop it. President Obama can't.
It's funny. I have a brother who is a top-of-the-pile driller. I have a brother who's very involved in the drilling in North Dakota, so I actually know something about that. Okay. We somehow lost him. But so, yeah, anyway, different environments are impacted. I do want to bring up something about smart meters. I had a call this week, a request to be looking with the meters, like some measuring meters. So we chose the street that I live on. And there's three different meters, not all owned by the same person. An omnidirectional meter that's looking at all the frequencies. A unidirectional meter, very, very tight focus meter that is looking just very narrowly at the smart meter. And then we had an omnidirectional meter that was only looking at the frequency of the smart meter. And it was pretty interesting to see. I don't know that I can speak to how the impacts are of the EMF that comes out of there, but there definitely is. We saw about every 3 to 4 seconds. That's an estimate. We didn't measure it that on a clock, but it was, I tried to count and see how often that was. There's a pinging and a pulsing that comes right out of those meters of about 2.5 microwatts per centimeter squared. And I looked to see for a quick drop-off point, and it really was not very quick. It was, by the time you're on the yellow line of the street, it's still pretty strong there, about, I would say, 0.02 microwatts. I don't want to get lost too deeply on the detail, but then you just start to walk across the street again, and then it's picking up from the housing on the other side. So I was going to ask you, because I know that we were told, oh, it only signals every once in a long while. It's a very, very intermittent, so it works out to about a minute out of the day. But when I was walking and watching with that, we saw that it is pretty constant. There's a spike, but the spike is multiple times per minute. And, you know, have you looked at that? Have you looked at the science on it? I know they say, oh, it's not going to hurt you, so maybe it's not going to hurt you. It seems like one group of scientists will speak to one side of it, another group speaks to another, but it definitely has a range out there. And we went to my house, and we went to a house with an analog house. The analog house, there was no reading outside their meter. My house that's got a digital meter, I was happy it didn't have a field outside of it, so I was happy for that. We did broaden the range, and we saw, you know, the cordless phone actually put out an extraordinary amount. And I have, since then, I've unplugged my cordless phone in the house. We also saw that the wireless put out an extraordinary field, the highest yet. If there was computers being used, if there's three computers up, it's all that much stronger. So that concern really hasn't gone away. People are still nervous about that. What are your thoughts on the smart meters? I know you're pretty supportive of them, yeah?
I don't know how to get into this. I don't claim to be an expert on smart meters or on EMF radiation. I've read dozens, approaching 100 probably, papers on the subject on both sides of the issue.
Mm-hmm.
I'm convinced for my family the risk of the meters that KIUC is using, which is very different from the kind of meters that were being used 10 years ago, much lower power, and a lot of the studies you were looking at were referring to these old meters that nobody's using anymore. But
I'm just looking at the readings, though, that were implemented.
So one caveat: I wasn't there with you. I don't know what you were reading, but I have no doubt that those were the readings that you got. And I was enheartened to see that in your report on Facebook that that in fact the smart meter readings were far lower than some of the other electronics that we have in our homes, which is, I think, kind of what we were getting from the people we'd been talking to in the industry. There is a recognizable and measurable field around them, but that it's significantly lower than the field around your cell phone, your mobile phone.
Your cell phone, but your cordless phone. There was a really profound difference. Like, the cell phone is high right next to it, like an inch away, and when it's off, there it's not there. But you're putting it right up next to your head, which I don't do, and I haven't done for a long time. But the cordless phone, that one is very strong, and that's constant because it's plugged into the wall. The internet, very strong and constant because it's trying to hit a range. The cell phone, less. But there's, you know, there's concerned people who feel that they're sensitive to it. And what I find is very difficult. I don't know enough to really say, but for people who do feel that that's the cause of their challenge, it's very real to them. And for people who believe it doesn't cause any challenge, it's very real to them. So it's hard to know on this.
It may be that some people have impacts and others don't. I mean,
that's
there,
what
there
I
is a variety.
That's what I kind of suspect is the case.
And at least at the utility, our commitment has been that if you don't want one, you don't have to have one. We've in fact pulled them out of people's houses who have had concerns.
I'm just finding with more of our society is switching more to this kind of wireless type of thing, so it's more convenient for everybody. But then I don't want to be 20 years down the road and find out that this whole time I've been getting brain tumors or something because my cell phone that I keep too close to my head, I don't know why, but my iPhone or whatever just cut out in its volume, so now I have to keep it right next to my head to be able to hear anyone. So
don't.
I know. It even warns you in your pan or in the little thing it comes with not to do that. And you know, what's the effects of the Wi-Fi? You know, there's not enough science coming out that's backing it by big sources. It's only kind of smaller independent sources that are coming out with most of this research. And
yeah, especially the ones that say it's not good for you. They are less well funded. The more better funded studies are paid by the very industry that is producing the product. So it might be that they do absolutely great studies, but it also causes you to think,
Kind of like GMO companies paying for the research of their own products.
Right, and I think we've become a cynical society because we are so awash with that type of situation where they say, trust us, trust us, trust us, so we're no longer a trusting society. But then the other challenge is that some people are maybe overly trusting. I have a caller who's been really patient, so let's go ahead and take them.
They might not even be there. I hope they are.
Oh. Okay.
So you got to get to the callers quicker.
Got to get to the callers quicker.
Call back, whoever we missed.
We do have, and this might have been that person, a lost and found animal. So Nancy has lost her dog, who has a blue collar and has a dog license and a name tag. I'm trying to see the name of the dog. It's a white part Airedale. Ears hang down with black spots. Lost. I don't see a name on the dog. But Nancy's telephone number is 826-7748. And the dog was lost in Princeville. So if you see Nancy's dog in Princeville, white part Airedale, ears hang down with black spots, a female, 826-7748 with a blue collar. Nancy, I hope you find your dog. So I have a caller. You're on the air.
Oh, you caught me.
Yes.
My question is, I don't object to hydro in small doses. I don't think we're going to build a Hoover Dam on the Wanlua River. And, you know, small hydro stations would probably be a very good thing because once it's there forever, essentially. The one up in
Wainiha?
Kanalei. Or, yeah.
Wainiha.
Wainiha is running away just fine. And my question would be about solar, but since I haven't had it anywhere on any of my houses yet, how hurricane-proof is solar, whether it's on a roof or whether it's on the ground? I'm sure they've considered.
I can speak to that a little bit because I was, and I'll let you speak to that too also, Jan, but involved in Hanalei Solar, where we installed them, and that company is still out there installing. And it costs more to put a hurricane-proof solar system in, but it is put. The whole system is like a little separate building, typically
right.
Not really tall, and there's concrete block, and everything is put inside, and the solar panels are on top, and there is a special cover that, when needed, it's put on top, and it's
to
locked down
wind.
To divert wind, and they're sure, really quite strong, and it definitely can be.
That's good. I'm glad to hear that. And just think of those things being up and at an angle. And if the wind gets behind them, it just...
be a lot of wasted money, yeah.
It can be like a windsurf sail.
Yeah, pumping through the air.
Mm-hmm. But normally when you see them installed where they're up at a little bit of an angle, they're tilted so that they get
right.
The best sun. The way they're designed is that can collapse. It collapses, it comes down, and what I have for mine is plywood cut for it.
Uh-huh.
So then I would bolt the plywood right on top if there was a hurricane coming.
Oh, good.
And then that keeps flying debris from coming forward and cracking it. But you're
sure.
Absolutely right to be considering those things, and I think no form of energy system is impervious, and what we saw in the last hurricane,
right.
About 70% of our infrastructure around the island came down, and that's one of the reasons why our power bills are so high. There was a lot of debt that was incurred
sure.
To rebuild that, and I've had...
They had just rewired half the island, I think.
They rewired
and everything
a lot,
and when
KIUC was funded, we've had this come up many other times, is part of it was trying to deal with that debt. So it was paid a little bit over market value, and I was in on some of that planning process, and there was an intention to be able to help purchase it high. They knew it was purchased high
perfect.
Because of that infrastructure debt. Do you
right.
Know something different to that, Jan?
No, I don't. I wasn't involved. I was a reporter on the outside in those days. But I had a comment on the mm-hmm. On the solar panels, and that is that the construction of solar arrays today is much better than it was in the past.
Oh, I'm sure.
I had a system on my house when Hurricane Eva. Hurricane Iniki came
yeah.
By, and it blew
right.
Off my roof. But it blew
yeah.
Off my roof because they had bolted the panel into redwood
right.
with galvanized screws, and the galvanized rotted the redwood, and so it didn't take much wind at all for it to lift
yeah,
up and fly into the valley.
One of my concerns, you know, not everybody knows how to do things right.
Yeah,
I would recommend anyone who plans to do it, talk to your neighbors who've done it, and get a good installer who's got a good track record.
Mm-hmm.
That's
and
right.
I would definitely recommend when people are talking to the installers, I would ask, how long have you installed in Hawaii?
Yep.
And how long have you installed on Kauai? Because there are many people who come in and they might have done a whole lot of business right now when we have these tax credits.
Right.
It's been one of the reasons we've had this. I would say it's been a success because we see all these systems being put in place. But many have come here and maybe those companies are really only 3 or 4 years in existence. They're
right.
Able to do the volume. They weren't here for a Niki. Maybe they don't really realize what can happen.
Right. Okay. That answers my question.
Okay, thank you.
Quite well. Thank you.
I just got to say on a side note, not to get off the KIUC topic, but all in all, I am very happy that Hurricane Iniki came. It was a really bad kind of thing that destroyed a large part of the island. But imagine where we would be right now if Hurricane Iniki had never happened.
Were you two? How old
yes,
were you?
I was two. Okay. I was a little baby back then. But, you know, the buildings had been done above Black Pot, and they were completely destroyed. What we're talking about now.
With the Hanalei Ridge?
With the Hanalei Ridge. That was completely destroyed during Hurricane Iniki. And I'm not positive, but I think it had been about 6 months. Once they had opened up completely after their completed construction, 6 months later, Hurricane Iniki came. about...
I don't think they were finished.
They weren't even finished.
I don't think they were finished. They weren't finished. It hadn't gone into business.
Oh, okay. So even better.
Well, okay.
Anyways, that's a side note. Sorry,
okay,
guys.
Okay, no, that's definitely a perspective, and perhaps we can come back to that. We have one more caller. Aloha, you are on the air.
Oh, hi, Felicia. I just had a quick story about the durability of solar systems. The six panels that were on top of our roof when Hurricane Nikki hit, we're still on top of the roof and still making electricity the next day, even though the house wasn't in the same place.
Really?
It's not the solar panels as much as the people installing them, you know, like if they just got to do the right stuff and bolt them through stuff and all that. So
think ahead.
We were the only people in the neighborhood that still had electricity.
What neighborhood were you in?
We're down Marston's Beach Road, actually.
Okay, that is really good to know. I know we didn't have anything up on our panels, and I almost felt guilty after the hurricane because we were in such good shape, and, you know, we're like trying to rent videos, and people are looking, what are you renting videos for? You know, because our house was normal. We didn't have a problem with either our solar water or our solar power.
Yeah, we still had water because we had a well, and it was pumped up by the solar. We couldn't live in the house because that was damaged, but all the infrastructure was still functioning fine.
I know, hilarious.
So it'll be really warm to have this kind of resilience in a lot of areas. If we have a good result and we've got hurricane hooks and all kinds of things like that on the buildings, our fire stations are going to be functioning, our school's going to be functioning. A lot of these roofs that were lost didn't have the hurricane hooks.
And I had a quick sustainable comment in general. Mm-hmm. As far as things like landfills and power production and all that, they should be spread around the island and just serving locally, and we should get off this central idea in a lot of ways, food production, all that. But you know, every community should have its own landfill on Kauai, just like the satellite landfills after Nikki, but done in a better way. We should all be dealing with our own garbage. That might encourage us to not have so much garbage.
I love that idea.
I think that's absolutely true.
Yeah, we shouldn't just trash one community and expect them to hold our burdens. We should all fix it. And if we had to look at it every day, it might, you know, keep it in our mind to not go buy those extra wrapped up stuff and all
exactly.
The extra plastic and crap. I've been living where I am now since October 31st, and I haven't generated one solid bag of trash yet.
What are you doing that is making that difference?
I shop very infrequently because I have a garden. I just separate all my recyclables. I have a little campfire that I cook my food on, and I use anything burnable for starting the fire. I even fold up and drain all my soy milk and hemp milk things, and they burn even though they have a little bit of foil in them. So it just, I'm still looking at my trash can right now. It's not even full. It's full up.
Well, that's awesome to hear that someone's actually got the right idea and following it.
I don't feel like
I'm living a deprived lifestyle either, or I'm like sacrificing on the cross or anything for this. It's just, you know, I think people are look to the wrong things for happiness, and you know, sometimes I feel sorry for the CEOs and hedge fund managers and all those guys, even though I criticize them a lot. But they're not happy either. They're seeking their happiness in the wrong things, and it's not working for them. And if you got $5 billion and you're not happy, you still got to go out there and make more. There's something wrong with you.
Straight up.
Like, how much money do you need to be happy? You know, Eric Fromm had the idea with the art of loving that, you know, we just need to seek real, meaningful existences and stop relying on all these false, I don't know, livelihoods or whatever we're doing, but we don't need so much. And with solar too, you know, I read this one thing that really stood me up. It was about, we don't need to be finding the more and more powerful solar system that can generate more power and store more power. We need to reduce our lifestyles.
Yeah.
We need to be requiring less power, and we really can just look for real meaning in life and stop buying stuff at Walmart you got to throw away next week.
And I can tell from the tone of your voice, you're a very happy man, right?
People can't believe that I'm happy because I hardly make any money, but I don't have any expenses. I still can give a lot to my children, and I have free time for the first time in my life. I've been working since sixth grade, but I just get rid of all the things that I needed to support. I don't have a vehicle. I ride a bike and the bus, and it's great. I look forward to getting on the bus now because there's so many people. It's always very interesting. It's like, you know, I don't have to pay attention to the road. I can space out, and I still get where I'm going to go. It's a great way for $25 a month. Unlimited rides.
Yeah, that's
wonderful.
Awesome. I'm glad to hear it.
You This way, it's quite a great place to live alternative lifestyles and actually find the real meaning of life, you know. What, look inside. What makes you happy?
Exactly.
That's right.
I think we've all been, as a whole of the country, has been brainwashed to find an artificial happiness that really isn't real. But I can tell you have some real happiness there. So thank you for calling.
You are. Thanks for being there. You guys are great. Aloha.
Oh, aloha. You are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. This is Kauai Soapbox Live with Felicia and Eric in the booth. And then Jan Tan Brutengate is in here from KIUC Board of Directors. So, Jan, I started the show off asking you a few questions of what you felt like was really important on your learning curve. So I heard you speak to some of the business aspects of it and how the metering is done and the funding and the charges for people. I think I also heard you speak to the regulatory elements of it, and that we haven't really addressed very much yet. That is, it's run by the PUC, is that correct, who regulates it, the Public Utilities Corporation?
All the utilities in the state, water utilities, unless they're government, like Princeville Water System, the electric utilities, the telephone companies, the gas company, the trucking companies are regulated by the Public Utilities Commission. KIUC, when it was formed, agreed also to remain under the regulatory oversight of the Public Utilities Commission, even though of the 950 or so cooperative electric companies in the United States, most of them are not. Most of them are unregulated by any government agency.
I know that there's a bill right now before the legislature trying to separate out energy cooperatives from the PUC. Have you followed that?
No, that's not exactly
okay,
what
it is.
Okay, what is it? What is occurring now is that there are dockets that show up before the PUC that are really aimed at much bigger utilities than we are. And in some cases aimed at for-profit utilities. Because we are an electric utility, we are dragged into those dockets.
Tell us what a docket is.
A docket is an issue that the PUC is wrestling with. As an example, if we have a discussion about decoupling, which is a way of separating the paying for a utility's fixed costs and a utility's energy cost, the cost of the power lines as opposed to generating the power. It's actually kind of interesting to me. That might be something we would want to be involved in, but it might not be something that KIUC needs to be involved in. But every time we get dragged into a docket, it's tens to hundreds of thousands in attorney's bills, because we have to show up at every hearing. We have to respond to every inquiry. We have to involve ourselves. We're not asking to be removed from that oversight, but we're asking that the PUC be given the authority to say, you know what, this doesn't really apply to KIUC. It's just going to cost you guys an extra money, and it doesn't really have much impact on you, and so we'll allow you to be lifted out. So the PUC retains absolute control. We're not asking to be deregulated.
Okay. I've been following a lot of the legislature very, very closely. That hasn't been a particular bill that I've been following tightly. Do you happen to know the number of that one?
Mm-hmm. No,
it's
I don't.
A House bill.
I don't remember it. I've seen it.
Okay, we have another caller, and you are on the air. Hello.
Aloha.
Aloha.
How are you doing?
I was listening to the gentleman who was talking about minimalization, riding his bike and taking
mm-hmm.
the bus.
The caller?
And, I'm sorry?
The caller that called in on that, yes?
Yes. And it reminded me of a book that I'm reading now called The Wisdom of Sustainability. And the subtitle on it is Buddhist Economics for the 21st Century.
Hmm.
And it's written by a gentleman named Sulak Sivarasksa, which I guess if you just remember the Sulak part, it's probably good enough. But in the book, and as I said, I'm still in process of reading it, it talks about structural violence. And what that is a process by which the society is structured, and how we experience violence on the earth between people, people and animals. Every living being is at the mercy of this process, because it comes from the place of corporations and government becoming enmeshed, and then the result of that is the structural violence. And it's very, very interesting, and it's not just going on, obviously, in the United States, but I think probably that much of it has generated from the cultural aspect of corporatocracy, if you will. So I just wanted to suggest that if people are really interested in maybe taking a more spiritual look at economics for our time, that they check this little book out. It's a very small book.
Buddhist Economics for the 21st Century?
Buddhist Economics for the 21st Century. And it actually is published by Koa Books, which is on Maui. And so if you wanted to, I'm not sure where it sold. I think you could probably go online and find it. But the author's last name is Fivarakasa, and his first name is Sulak, S-U-L-A-K. So it's really a wonderful book. It's very inspiring. It has a comment by His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and a lot of other very spiritually Akamai folks have read this and are using it. And so I just wanted to put it out there that I think it's good for us to look at what we can do on a day-to-day basis, like the gentleman who had called in.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's also really important for us to be able to see a positive or a spiritual aspect of what is going on in the outer as well.
Thank you.
So that's just my two cents.
Well,
and
we really appreciate the call, because, you know, knowledge is true power, and the sharing of knowledge is nothing but awesome. So we really appreciate the call.
You're so welcome, and I so appreciate your program.
Thank you.
You guys rock.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Have
You're
a great day.
Awesome. Aloha.
Aloha. Aloha. She's bringing up something really important, and that is when we look at technology, like when we look at just increasing technology, increasing technology, increasing technology, we can get so highly focused on all of that. You know, when I like the term negawatts, you know, if we can work on not creating so much power, and then we had the caller talking about decentralized elements. I like that with the source point power provision. On that, when we're looking at the board of directors who are there, what do you see as making up a strong makeup on that? We have business that's important to know. It's important to know the legal elements. But as she's bringing up in the caller before, maybe it's really important to know the spiritual elements and to have a frame of reference across the layers of our community, both economic and ethnic. I mean, when you're in there in the board and you're talking about things, how do you guys make the decisions that you make? And how do you see board makeup is important?
It's critical to a community cooperative like ours that you have a broad cross-section of the community. And I think that we have somewhat of a broad cross-section. It tends to be an old cross-section. And that ends up being the case in utilities, cooperative utilities across the country. It takes a lot of time. It's something on the order of 40% of a work week is what the directors of KIUC commit to doing KIUC-related stuff, going to meetings, going to conferences, going to community meetings, taking classes, doing all of those things that we need to do an effective job. The result of the time commitment is that a lot of working folks can't do it.
A lot of parents of young children
would have difficulty with it. We have one board member who is, I think, our youngest board member, Pat Gagan, and his daughter comes to a lot of our meetings, his young daughter. And it's fun to have her there, but it is, you know, it is a challenge, and perhaps, the younger people in our community are not as well represented as they could be. That said, we have a really diverse board from folks who've been in business, folks who've been in farming, folks who've been in education, in my case, media. We have a couple of attorneys, a former judge,
some engineers.
I don't know if we have an engineer. We may have an engineer. But we've got quite a cross section, but we certainly don't have a representative cross section. And that perhaps doesn't happen at all, or it doesn't happen until the voters decide to do more. One of the things that's concerned me over time is that we have a remarkably low voter turnout in our board elections. We have somewhere between in the neighborhood of 30,000 customers out there, a little more actually, a little over 7,000 vote. So are we adequately representing our community? At some level, it's the members' fault if we're not, because two-thirds of the members aren't voting.
Yeah, and then another thing that does skew it is, I would say almost anybody who's on this island turns on a power switch, opens a refrigerator door, goes through a stoplight. It's probably very few exceptions of people who aren't energy consumers, yet only one bill payer per household is a voter. In some households, in my neighborhood, there might be 10 or 15 people in an Ohana zone type of housing, and then there are plenty of houses that are power users that actually don't have any occupants that live here in them. But, you know, it all comes into the mix. It's an interesting piece. I am expecting a call from the Big Island, somebody who is going to be speaking to some of the land uses for power on the other islands and the undersea cable that is being proposed. So we will possibly get that call very soon. But after that, I would like to give you a moment to just speak to why you feel that you are going to be strong for the board. Yes, you are on the air. You're on the air.
Hi, Felicia. It's Mike Bond.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good, good. So you're calling in. You're going to be here this week. You want to tell us, you have written a book. Is that correct?
Absolutely. It's called Saving Paradise, and it deals with many of the issues that are important to KKCR listeners. It's basically a look at the environmental destruction of Hawaii and the political corruption that goes along with it, and some of the things that are showing up on our news radars right now, from GMOs to the Public Land Development Corporation Act 97, the undersea cable, and big wind. A lot of these issues are very significant for Hawaii, and they're all in the book Saving Paradise.
And for people who aren't on the Big Island, I just want people to understand what Act 97 is, and that's working with the volcano and allowing unrestrained or unsupervised, unregulated drilling into the volcano for creating energy, geothermal power. So it's like a PLDC of the substrate of the whole island chain, but most particularly for Hawaii Island to be utilized for geothermal power. So I know that that's a very emotional issue. Where is your book set?
Friday night, I'm going to be speaking from 5 to 7:30 and signing the books at Tuck's Bookstore in Hanapepe. And everyone is invited to come by and join the conversation. We're going to talk about the future of Hawaii and what we need to protect. And basically, Saving Paradise is precisely that. It's about saving Hawaii while we still can.
The story is, though, it's a novel, right? In which island upon is it set? Is it set in Oahu or Hawaii?
It takes place, you know, it's a funny thing, and the only island it doesn't touch is Kauai. And that's because you guys are such an old island, and you know, geologically speaking. No, it's about a surfer who grew up on the Big Island, which is where all my ohana is from, and went into special forces in Afghanistan and comes back, and he's a correspondent for surfing magazines, and gets caught up in the murder of a beautiful Honolulu reporter, and that's the theme of the book, is that Hawaii, the beauty of Hawaii, is being murdered, if you wish. It's the metaphor. And so he tries to find out who killed her, and in the process gets blamed for it. And
you don't give too much of the story away.
No, that's all in the very beginning.
Okay.
But it's the theme, too, is that Hawaii is a pearl that we're crushing into concrete. So it's doing very well, Felicia. Nationally, it's starting to really draw attention to some of the corruption issues that are so endemic in Hawaii and that we really need to address. And so it's doing very well in Hawaii and doing very well nationally. And at Talk Story, I'm going to be talking about some of these issues and inviting other people to Talk Story as well. And this is how we share information and make our state safer and stronger.
And I met you, Mike, at an activist meeting that happened recently. You were part of the We the People march over on Oahu for the start of the legislature, and there's a group called Hawaii Alliance as well as ICAA. Both have had exposure on KKCR. And
yep.
When we were there, it was looking at these number of land use issues, and energy is very much a land use issue, too. When it is petroleum or propane, that's less of a land use issue, but that is not responsible when we do our own land-based, locally-based power production. It's a land use issue. So we've been looking at big wind on Molokai and Lanai, and what's challenging for both of those locations is the wind power created is really going to go over to Oahu, largely to power the rail system there. So it's very unpleasant for the people who are living on those islands. It's one thing if you're producing your own power.
Mm-hmm.
It's another thing if it's going to somewhere else. Now, I've been trying to follow the legislative movements, and it seems that big wind on Molokai has been halted, at least for right now. Is that your understanding also?
Yes, it is. In fact, the developers were so overwhelmed by the public opposition. We were 97 in one poll, 99% in another poll against the project. And the important thing to bring out is that these wind projects do not do anything to decrease greenhouse gas emissions or fossil fuel use. And the reason why is that wind is so erratic, going up and down all the time, that you need to run a fossil fuel plant over time to back it up so that you can keep your energy flowing into the grid constant, otherwise you cook your grid. So all around the world, thousands and thousands of wind projects have pointed out time and time again, no savings in CO2 emissions and no savings in decrease in fossil fuel use. But these projects, because they have such huge federal subsidies there, the investment bankers love them and the politicians love them.
Well, I think you're bringing up two points that you know, I would probably want to look in deeper to really before I would affirm that that's accurate. When the wind power is going, it truly is producing power, and I'm sure that, like, when I look at how we have one of our board of directors in here from Kauai Island Utility Cooperative,
mm-hmm.
they have in their place a really good system of where they're looking at what is the average power used yesterday, today, by hour. They're looking at what's coming and being produced. They're looking at their production capacity and their demand as it's happening. And I think that, you know, when there's wind power, they're going to be absolutely right on top of looking at that. So there's truth in what you're saying, but I would expect, I will need to confirm more of this, but that they wouldn't be turning on another engine. We have basically like these big diesel jet engines sitting on their side is how we make our power here.
Yep.
And they're actually, I was very impressed when I was down there to see how conscientious they are in terms of when the power is turned up. And so we have to look at those things. When you're talking about the element with corporate backroom deals, that's where I think, you know, you have to say less to sway my opinion on that one, because, you know, when we're looking at these geothermal drills, they're getting paid whether they hit a hot spot or not, you know, and when the rail system is being put in, the installers are getting paid whether the end product ends up being cost effective or not. So there's a lot of motivation for builders to get these deals to do it, and we have a lot of green energy credits right now.
Yeah, that's all very true, and that those are good points. And I must credit the Hawaii Electricity Co-op, because you are far and ahead in Hawaii, ahead of the rest of the island. The goal now in Kauai is to be 50% rooftop solar within the next several years, and that is the direction that Hawaii needs to go. And what that comes down to is the idea of a distributed electrical generation system rather than a centralized one. And that's the future, which is so good. In Hawaii, everybody should have a solar hot water heater and solar electricity generation on their roofs. And these huge projects, like these big wind projects, which, sure, they create electricity, but they actually cause the use of more fossil fuel than if they weren't there. And they also don't do anything to reduce greenhouse gases. And in fact, the UK has just recently announced that wind projects are a greater environmental impact than climate change, and they have canceled all future wind projects. That's the way the Europeans are going. They're backing out of onshore wind entirely.
I will look that up. And can you send me some links on that so I can bring that up on another show? Let me ask Jan, have you, in your experience at Kauai Island Utility Cooperative, have you been hearing something that supports that?
It's an interesting question, and I don't have a lot of expertise on wind, partly because of our Newell Shearwaters. We don't do wind. And one of the things that one of the similar issues that we have is we have large amounts of solar, more than I think shortly more than any other island, and within the next year and a half we'll have more solar on our grid on Kauai than any utility in the United States.
Absolutely.
And maybe the world.
You will, more than anybody else in the world.
And there is an intermittency issue with solar, as there is with wind. The way we've been dealing with that is to put utility-scale batteries into place, which can respond instantaneously. If a cloud comes by and turns off the sun for a moment, the batteries pick up the load almost instantaneously. And so we don't need to have that backup diesel generator running in the same way. There are some other, and talking about, we were talking about complexity earlier, there are some other issues involved in doing renewable energy, and one of them involves having the inertia, having a system that can handle a sudden loss of power or a sudden demand for power without causing a brownout or a spike in energy, and we're dealing with those issues at KIUC on a regular basis, trying to get a handle on how you run a modern grid which has the volume of renewable energy technologies, many of which are intermittent, that we're going to have, those are significant issues. In our case, I don't think we've seen increased oil use because of the intermittent stuff we're using, but that may or may not be the case somewhere else.
Yes. So, Mike, thank you for what you're doing. Like, if I can restate it somewhat for the listener, in that when you wrote this novel called Saving Paradise, it's both a good read as well as one of those stories where you learn a lot. And so a person who would be reading this book would have a lot to think about in terms of the relationship between public policy, business, utilities, and land use, all set with a very personalized story with surfers, beautiful women, murdered people.
All the necessary items. It's supposed to be an absolutely fantastic read, and they're calling it now the eco-novel of the decade. That's what my publisher's calling it, and it's doing very well, and I certainly invite everyone to come to Talk Story Bookstore Friday night from 5 to 7:30. We can chat about all of these issues, and if you can't come to Talk Story, the book is also available online as either an ebook or as a physical print book from Barnes & Noble and from Amazon and iTunes. But you guys are great. I have to salute what Kauai is doing in the KRUC. You're going in exactly the right direction, and you're going to be a template for the future. So my best to everyone on Kauai from little old Molokai. We just won a huge victory against Big Wind, and we're now going after the cable and the PLDC and the GMOs.
So you live on Molokai. I think I told the listener wrong that you're from Hawaii, but you're from Molokai.
My Ohana's all from the Big Island.
Oh, okay.
No, I live in Molokai, and so we've been right in the firing line for all of these hideous projects because we're a smaller community and we're mostly Hawaiian, and therefore we're the first ones that the big corporations pick on.
Well, anyway. And I think that you don't have, you're not rubbing shoulders with your county government the way that people are that live on the same island. The Ni'i'au folks don't, they don't see people in Foodland and be able to talk story with them about what's going on. So there's an extra layer of insulation. So for the listener who might be on vacation, Hana Pepe, where the Talk Story book place is, it's Hana Pepe on the south, almost west side of the island.
Exactly. And I thank you very much, Felicia. And again, my congratulations to the folks of Kauai. And let's keep all these good fights going because we are going to save paradise.
Thank you.
And caller, before you go, can you mention the name of that book one more time for the listeners out there?
It's Saving Paradise by Mike Bond. That's me. It's my fifth published novel. And like all my novels, it deals with a crucial issue. A previous one had to do with elephant poaching. Another one had to do with death squads in Latin America. And I'm always trying to deal with and to bring news about what we need to protect and care for.
So that's Saving Paradise. All right,
hey,
thank you so much for calling, and hope you have a great day.
Well, you too. Thank you, guys. Take care.
Aloha.
Take care. So you are listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea. Jan Ten Brutengate is in the studio with Eric and myself, Felicia, and we are talking about energy issues. And we can open it up to other things, too. Go ahead.
There was one thing. We had a couple of callers who were talking about efficiency and conservation and sustainability. And I did want to throw out one little stat that's a fun one, and that is that about 5 years ago, our average electrical use, residential electrical use on Kauai was about 520 kilowatt hours.
Per
household.
Per month? Per
month.
Okay.
Oahu, by contrast, is over 600.
Mm.
But in the last 5 years, Kauai residents have reduced their average use to 470. It's about a 10% reduction in use. We don't have a clear handle on how much of which thing causes that. Certainly some of it is solar on rooftops. But a great deal of it, we think, is the 120 or so thousand compact fluorescent light bulbs that the utility's given away, the replacement of inefficient old refrigerators with new ones, the replacement of many old appliances with new ones, and there are all sorts of programs in schools. Kids are coming home with a conservation ethic, and they're forcing their families to apply that ethic And we're seeing the results. We're actually burning less oil just through using less electricity than we did just a few years ago. I think that's a really nice kudo for our
mm-hmm.
island.
And how about the commercial sector? Are they dropping their consumption?
The commercial sector is a little more difficult, and I don't have the numbers at my fingertip. A lot of our commercial sector tracks tourism, so it's much harder to get a sense of you know whether there's a significant drop in consumption.
But certainly the lighting that they would put in their places would be impacted the same way. There's actually a lot of elements that they can do. You know, you see the thing about drop your towel on the floor if you want it washed, otherwise conserve. And
yeah, it's clear that particularly hotels are doing remarkable things, partly because energy is expensive, to reduce their energy use, and they've had significant reductions in some cases. I just don't have the numbers on
mm-hmm. What, and then towards the end of the show, we're just going to pull in a few different elements that aren't directly energy, but I would like you to be able to give us a wrap-up of what you think you specifically are able to bring to the KIUC Board of Directors that is very important to re-elect you.
You want me to do that now?
I want you to plug yourself for a moment. Just do a straight up plug.
Puts
you on the spot, right?
I'm not good at tooting my own horn. I've lived in the islands most of my life, moved to Molokai when I was 8, lived on a pineapple plantation. I was a newspaper reporter, a science writer, an environment writer for 37 years at the Honolulu Advertiser. I've been on the KIUC board for 3 years. I've been running my own small business for 6 years. I coach... I have coached canoe paddling. I train kids in karate. I do all sorts of things, and I'm part of this community, and I think that has some value. I'm a little bit of a geek about energy. I really enjoy the fact that we're making the strides that we're making, that we're moving so aggressively. We're going to be, I like to say we're saving the world here. We're making decisions at our utility on Kauai, that are going to be, one of the previous callers said, that are going to be the model of the world. We're doing things that at a rate, that's really unprecedented. And I enjoy being part of that process. I can't claim that my presence there is going to make a big, difference. But as one voice of nine in working on the policies that move us in that direction, in giving on the behalf of the members whom we represent, our staff permission to take risks on our behalf to get us to that place where we use far less oil, where we have a more resilient system. Our staff is already so remarkable. We on a regular basis have the best reliability numbers in the state. I think that I'll be able to participate in that conversation and add things to it.
How about you've had a career in communication, and if I was to take a little checklist of where I think KIUC is improving and needs to improve even more, is on the communication, is how to get the information out early before people get alarmed or people feel mistrust or things like that. So being able to bring forward information. Do you participate in the Currents magazine?
I've done a little bit, but we have an excellent and fairly new, he's been there less than a year, communications director, Jim Kelly, who has done a remarkable job with making the Currents a compelling read. I think even you will agree that you get more information about energy than you used to. The Currents was always fun to read. It's got a little harder edge than it used to have.
I appreciate Currents magazine.
And it's throwing more information about energy, about things that we might not have been willing to throw out there, three or four years ago because we weren't really convinced that people wanted to know or cared. we have learned in the last 3 years that people do care. And we're willing.
At least started to, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what I've learned being on this show is we have a really engaged community and we have really intelligent people. And I have been so honored to be in the crosshairs of all the questions, all the information that has come through. And I think the capacity of our community to process this information, if people are spoken to like they're not going to care, it's harder to get them to engage. But when people are drawn out to give good mana'o, they sure do. So I think that that is a wonderful thing. On that point, we have a caller. And you are on the air.
That went up in Hanapepe.
Hello.
Okay, hi.
You know what I mean?
You're on the air now. Hello?
Hello.
Hey, you're on the air.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about the solar panels.
Yes.
And I was wondering, you know how they put them up? Like they rent them from these guys, they put them up on some land out here on the west side. Why don't they just put them on everybody's home?
We
set up a way that we can pay it back with our monthly bill.
Instead of leasing the land to put the solar panels on, you're saying, why don't we just put it on every individual's home?
Yeah.
Instead of stop paying this lease.
That's a really good point. You know, like if people were volunteering to avail their rooftop as land space for the solar system.
Yeah, why don't they do that instead of spending more money? I just don't understand why don't they don't, like if people can't afford to do it, they should do it for them.
It's because we need more creative minds like you sitting right there at the board telling them what to do.
Do you have a thought on that, Jan?
Excuse me?
You're talking to Jan.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting concept, and we talked a little bit earlier about the concept of leasing roofs for
real estate.
More than just doing it, you might actually be able to pay people for the use of their roofs.
Yeah, I'm not even talking about that. Just putting them up for them, and then even if they had to pay for them, I'll help you pay for them. That I'm sure everybody would be willing to do that.
I'm sure there's plenty of people on this island that would gladly give up their roofs, no pay at all, just to help out for the community.
Because I hear there's a company that goes around and they lease them to you. Have you heard anything about that company?
Yes, I think that there's a piece on there with InTrade for the solar tax credit. Do you know about that, Jan? I know if we have an Akamai listener out there, I've had this explained actually by Charlie from Hanalei Solar, who is a competitor of theirs, but there is a company that does put it in, and at almost no cost to the homeowner up front. They do extract their payments, but it part of how that happens is that if somebody's normally getting a $300 a month payment, you would still be paying the $300 a month, but the difference between what your bill is and then what is created gets taken out of the cost of the solar system. I am not an expert on that, but that is there is a system
that's
out there.
I'd rather pay for the panels, but I'm just saying it's an idea. Why don't they think about it instead of just having these guys? Because they're making money with all those panels that they put up down here in Hanapepe. And there's one right down the street, another one. I just think it's money getting wasted.
Yeah, that's definitely a great idea.
What I know from being involved with solar installation, that there is a scale of numbers. When you have hundreds of panels for one inverter or one setup that is going to be an industrial size of where it's collected and put onto the grid, because it has to go from DC to AC current to go onto the grid. If there's eight panels on a house, it's going to require an inverter. You know what? I'm glad that you're asking this question, because I'll see if I can't get one of the engineers from KIUC, maybe somebody like Brad Rockwell, somebody that has a good engineering side on it to be able to address those?
Yeah, but I do something like that, you know?
Yeah, I think Felicia is right on it. It's a great idea. It's an interesting idea for empowering the community.
Sure.
But there are economies of scale issues. It is much less expensive to put out 8,000 solar panels in a field to put 8 panels on 1,000 houses.
Mm-hmm.
Dramatically different cost structures.
Yeah, because I noticed the panels they put up on this side are much better panels.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from what I've seen on the Science Channel, those are the panels that are made in Europe, if I'm right.
Many are made in Europe. Many are made in China. There's a little less made in America now. But so I think that's a really good piece for discussion. Perhaps that can be something brought back to the group if there is a way that perhaps the homeowner bears some of the burden so that the cost is offset to be neutralized, so that if it was about an equal cost for the utility company to put, you know, 8 panels on 1,000 houses as it costs to put 8,000 panels in a single field, maybe those are at least discussions worth considering.
Well, you guys are doing a great job. I'm glad I called.
I'm glad you did, too. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Aloha.
On the solar issue, Felicia, one thing that I think we touched on a little bit earlier that's really important to folks who are considering putting solar on their roofs and haven't done it yet is when you talk to the solar folks who are talking about selling you a system, ask a lot of questions and make sure that your discussion includes having had a talk with the utility.
Mm-hmm.
You need to understand not only how your solar system works, but how the relationship works between you. Because at some point, the solar installer walks away, and what's left is you and the utility. And if you don't understand the utility's point of view, or vice versa, it's a problem. We've had situations where people have put solar on roofs and then found out that the utility equipment on their street couldn't handle the amount that they had, and that there were additional costs. And then as a utility, one of the things we have to decide is who eats that? Does the person who caused the new cost do it, or do all the neighbors? Does the rest of the membership need to pay the cost for upgrading? There are a lot of interesting issues, but it pays. Solar isn't simple. We talked earlier about the complexity of the utility business. If you're putting it on your roof and you're developing a financial relationship with the utility, you need to talk that financial relationship out before you sign on the bottom line, as it were.
Okay.
And we just had a caller talking about the 800 panels on the west side.
We just gave an example, 8,000 panels.
Oh, 8,000 panels. They had just called in about these panels. He had noticed that they are on a slope, and he was wondering if the KIUC was doing anything about erosion. Because it is on a slope, he was wondering if it's all these panels and all this construction work is going to be eroding the hillsides that they're on.
Yeah, it's not clear to me which of the west side systems they're talking about. The only solar arrays that KIUC owns currently out there are on the roof of a building.
Yeah.
The facility in Port Allen is owned by Alexander and Baldwin. Mm.
Right next to LALE plant there.
And we wouldn't have any authority to go on their property and tell them how to deal with erosion, but I'm sure that's a concern of theirs.
So the caller would have to go to the owner of those panels directly and ask them what they're doing about erosion.
Yeah, or see whether they, in fact, are handling that issue.
Yeah.
I know at the one solar array on the island, they've got goats walking around underneath. They've got grass growing. Erosion is presumably not much of an issue because they've got it well grassed.
Yeah, because when there is no grass underneath it, one would think that creates a problem. I know Eric had done a little bit of research on another topic.
I don't want to bring that up now. Seriously, it's way too big of a topic to bring up in the last 15 minutes. I almost find it a disgrace to him.
Okay, well, let me bring something up that y'all wanted to bring up that is an earlier programmer who called it to my attention out of the paper Today it was announced that the Kauai Police Department Special Services team will get some high-precision sniper rifles, and they bought two of these rifles at $5,500 each, and you know, more heavy artillery to deal with our calm little community. And that's a little nerve-wracking.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like that we're awfully powered up. You know, I think we could pretty much fight the Al-Qaeda with the type of power, the firepower that we have on the island here. And, you know, you make the paper if you get caught shoplifting. So it's sort of... It seems to be an interesting disparity, and when we have this type of equipment, it seems that they got to come out and practice with the special services.
As far as I can see, the police force is definitely kind of increasing here on Kauai. I've seen a picture from a friend of six new large trucks for the police department that are now being brought onto Kauai, so there's police can go further deeper into Loop Road and kick the people off of, say, Polaholi Beach, and trying to get more people off of Blackpot Beach because it's technically illegal to have your trucks on the beach and stuff like that. But as far as I can see, yeah, the police force is just kind of getting a little bigger and bigger.
Well, it is interesting when we see all this heavy weaponry, because they do get used, you know. It gets tested, and it gets... So I have to say that, that's a deep sigh for me to see, you know, that kind of investment into something that it's really hard to, you know, it's buying potential, and then you have the potential, you need to get the training with it, and we do have a caller.
Aloha, you're in the air.
Hello?
You're on the air.
Go ahead.
I'm calling, I have a question.
Sure.
It seems like the last KIUC election, the voting, the election was outsourced to run it, that is, to a private company, and they brought the electronic voting machines. Everyone voted, then they came and took the machines, and then they simply tell us who wins the election, and there's no transparency. I could be wrong about that, though. So,
that was the same with the Linda Lingle vote, wasn't it?
Oh, I wanted to see if board member present,
Jan,
knows if there's any transparency.
I actually do know, but Jan, do you want to answer that?
Well, I'd be happy to have you, since I'm a candidate. I should keep my hands off of the voting situation.
Well,
this
what,
year.
What I can say, I was actually asked onto the short list of people to be in there. They tend to take people like myself. Last year I had been doing a number of shows where we were discussing concerns with KIUC. There was some very serious concerns. So they pick a list of people from all the different perspectives, and they have them in there, and they're standing there right behind every ballot that is being seen. And so every ballot goes through a review committee, and they're all in the room, and they're all looking, and so they would have people that have the varying viewpoints to decide that. So I think they worked really, really hard last year, and one of the reasons that they brought an outside company in was so that they would not be accused of biasing the election. They brought somebody else in. They brought in watchdogs. And I did speak to somebody who was in that room and who did feel like it was absolutely an authentic election.
Okay. Yeah, that was... I'm sorry to the caller who had called in earlier and asked me to ask that question. We were just a little bogged up with the conversation. But I hope that answered your question. And I just want to say, for the research that I did do, I'll bring it up next Tuesday, but I wanted to talk a little bit more about Christopher Darner, the LAPD officer, and the shootings that had happened in California. Right now, he's officially announced dead by the news. As I said, kind of officially by the news. I don't really believe that, but I would rather bring that up with on another discussion, because there's a lot of different topics to talk about there. But what we had finished talking about was, yeah, the police force getting two new high-caliber sniper rifles. And as I said, there's six new police trucks on the island, so... Yeah, I don't know. It seems like the police force is getting bigger and stronger, but that just kind of throws me off of the fact that they're trying to kick campers off of Pulahali Beach, and I've heard they're trying to kick more people off of Blackpot Beach. You know, I've grown up, you know, barbecuing at Blackpot. I've grown up barbecuing, camping with my family at Pulahali Beach, and to see that kind of lifestyle getting taken away, it's kind of the Kauai lifestyle, you know. So it's kind of it's very strange to me to see that it's all being kind of slowly, step by step, that old Kauai lifestyle that I grew up with is fading. And I'm sure for the Canucks out there that are a lot older than this 22-year-old here can say the same.
Well, I think it's very much true that each generation sees a bigger and bigger shift. And really for the whole country of the United States, we're seeing an ever-increasing control grid that's underway. And actually, even when I just use that word grid, I think that, you know, each
one...
It's
a nice job of bringing it back to it.
Well, I mean, it's each thing can strengthen our movement forward, and each element can also weaken it. We've been spending quite a number of weeks discussing, or months actually, discussing the Public Land Development Corporation, and actually a lot of the land use that goes to the genetically modified organisms. And so it's real interesting when we have a subsidized industry like that. If organic food was subsidized in the same way that the biotech industry is subsidized, well then organics would be what's so strong and makes so much sense. And so even like our author Mike Bond was speaking of, we can tip the scale in one direction or another. And I think energy and water is like the jugular of society. Water is really the most core. Water, land, air, water, and then energy in the modern world is so essential. And so we really have to be trusting the group that we have. And so you can correct me on this. When I think of having a governing board, a board of directors that is compensated a little bit, but actually pretty modestly for the amount of time that it consumes, we have that board and need a diverse board to be able to keep balance with the power company, who does really a very good job with what they have. We see very antiquated or old system down there at LALE. I mean, it seems like it's been repaired and repaired and repaired. It's out there in the salt wind. It's, 40 some odd years old, and they do an extraordinary job with it. The Kapaya plant is modern and new and very efficient and good plant there. We have these things, and I think people can get really tight down their own area of expertise and try and bring in the most modern piece, and that can be good and sometimes, you know, not as necessary as we might think. In another 5 minutes, we're going to have Jazz with John, and John Gordon is going to be in here. We have a caller. You're on line one. You're on the air.
Hi. I just want to make a suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
I just had this flash that, you see, for a long time, we've been letting the politicians make all the decisions, and we even make sure somehow it happens that they're the only ones that dialogue with the police, and we, the people, should have a regular dialogue with the police to inform them what it is we want and we don't want. And one thing is, we don't want them to be militarized because we're not afraid. We want to say, hey, it's not about creating fear, it's about taking our power back and working with the police so they work with us.
Working with the community, yeah.
Okay, I like that. I like that suggestion.
Yeah, and then we have dialogues with them and we say, well, okay, we don't really feel that you need these big weapons, and why should the decisions always come from Washington? Let's talk community and say, we don't want this on our island, because they've been saying for quite a while now that, you know, all these horrible things are being caused in the United States with children being killed and everything, and it's because of these high-powered rifles. So they're going to take them away from the people, and then they're going to give them to the police. And so now we're going to have a militarized police force, and we don't need that.
Well, if you even, though, look into the backstory, you know, murders have gone down, the amount of murders that actually happen with the high-powered rifles are minimal. So what we have is a skewed propaganda that is occurring to create policy. So what you're speaking of is, how do we talk to Chief Perry and say, hey, we don't want this, we don't need this.
But I think we should have friendly meetings with him on a regular basis in different communities where he gets to talk to the people and gets updated on how we feel about where we live and what, how they can help us, because we'd like to help them too when we can.
Exactly. I completely agree with that.
So let's move the shift, the power from always from the Washington and above us to within us and around us.
Well, I'd like to see that. Maybe write a letter to the Garden Island also. Maybe we can start to create that.
Start thinking that way.
Telling the police commission, I know, I will just say this on air, I'm way more afraid of the police than I am of any neighbor or anybody criminal in my neighborhood.
And I don't want to be afraid of the police. I want them to be my friends.
Yeah.
I want them to be like the bobbies in England and, you know, go back to the sticks.
When the people fear the government, there's tyranny. When the government fears the people, there's liberty. Thomas Jefferson.
Ah, there we go. I love it.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you for calling.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
For the show. It's always great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Law.
Thanks.
So we are just about at the end of our show. I want to allow you a final word, both of you, and then we're going to hear the county council report, and then we'll hear jazz.
I'll just throw out one little piece. You talked about our old power plant at Port Allen, and I'll just say the reason that we're keeping that plant and continually repairing those old generators is so that we don't buy new oil-fired generators. We're keeping them as backup. And we're hoping that within a few years we'll be able to turn those machines off.
Yes, and I wish everybody, I wish you guys had field trips for miscellaneous people to come in and see, because I know for myself it shifts my whole perspective on the power company really to appreciation, really appreciation for the amazing accomplishments that they do. And when you see the aged equipment down there in kept in such good repair, in the winds, in the salt winds, you know, it's a great example of recycling and resilience. I try not to use the word sustainable anymore. I want resilience, because we want to be getting better. And they're very clear of why they are utilizing their equipment to the full absolute life of the equipment. And so it's a great job there. Eric?
I just wanted to say thank you so much to all the listeners out there, and especially the callers, because, you know, some of the callers, you know, you had great ideas and great stories, and it's all because of you that we're up on the air. So I just want to say thank you and aloha.
And you are listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea.